श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय, श्री श्री ब्रजनाथ हलदार जी की जय, श्री नृसिंह भगवान की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय, श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद। So, pranam to all of you. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for coming. And welcome. We are continuing today with a series of lectures we have started a few days ago about Brahma Stuti. For those who have not been there, basically these are the prayers of Sri Brahma. Can you turn on this light?
Yes.
The prayers of Brahma. After being considerably bewildered by Krishna in Vrindavan, by this unparalleled exhibition of Aishwarya. Brahma thought he kidnapped Krishna's friends, Krishna's cops, and eventually realized that was not the case. While Krishna expanded himself in a replica form for each one of them, and eventually he showed that to Brahma, and Brahma became, the four heads of Brahma were basically spinning one after another. So after this, and after Brahma realizing I committed a great mistake, I offended Bhagavan, he starts to pray in a spirit of deep repentance, being aware of the reality of Krishna, Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam, Krishna being the fountainhead of all phases of divinity, and expressing his desire to serve Krishna in the context of what's called Sakya Rasa, or a friendly relationship. That's Brahma's longing, basically. So that will become apparent as the prayers progress more and more. So today we are in our fifth meeting, and we will be studying the third verse of these prayers. There are totally 40 verses, so we have a long journey in this connection. Let's see, maybe I will finish them next year when I'm returning here. Who knows? Let's see. But to begin with, as usual, we are making some brief recap of what we saw in the previous class. So I briefly mention what I saw, what we saw yesterday. Yesterday, right? Yeah, yesterday. So basically, in the verse that we saw yesterday, I will briefly read it in English and comment some words. Brahma is saying to Krishna, I cannot truly comprehend with controlled mind the glory of this divine form of yours, O Lord, which is a manifestation of your grace on me, manifest by your own will, and which appears just to fulfill the desires of your devotees. It is certainly not a product of the material elements. Then, how can I understand the happiness you experience within yourself? And how can I know your form, whose bliss is unknown to others, though it is present directly before me? So, here, Brahma is further establishing this idea of Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in the words of Srila Prabhupada, and establish this idea. Krishna is the source even of Narayan, which is generally considered as God. So the Srimad Bhagavatam and our Gaudiya Sampradaya is presenting this very unique idea, which is Krishna is the source of God. Sometimes atheists ask, okay, if God is the source of everything, who is the source of God? We can say Krishna. We have an answer for that. And if someone asks who is the source of Krishna, we'll say Radha. And if someone asks who is the source of Radha, we'll say Krishna. End of the story. Next argument. So Brahma is realizing all the things that are pretty much overwhelming. No? So he's basically not able to grasp, to ascertain what's going on with this form. From this unique form that seems like of an ordinary cowherd boy, unlimited Narayans are coming. So, I mean, and I'm the most smart guy in the whole universe. I mean, Brahma is the topmost scientist, if you will. Forehead, thinking in all directions. But even, he says, and I have controlled mind, and even in that situation, I cannot fathom what's going on here. So if I cannot understand in this world, who can understand, basically? And of course, the answer is nobody can understand in this world Krishna nor his form unless he's allowing himself to be known by his kripa, by his grace. That's what Brahma will make in these and other verses. So Brahma is implying here, before Krishna, you showed me these four armed forms of Narayan, so many of them. I cannot even understand one of those unlimited four armed Narayans. What to speak to understand all those four armed forms? What to speak or understand that unique form of yours from which all the other forms are coming? I cannot understand. This verse has this idea, this theme. I cannot understand. I cannot understand. I cannot understand constantly. That's the situation of Brahma here. You are the avatari, the source of all the sense. You are the perfect object of my sakya, of my friendly aspiration, basically. And as we mentioned, Krishna doesn't have a body, but Krishna is his body. Unlike us. We always hear we are not this body. But Krishna is his body. He's not different from his body. His body is eternal, transcendental. It's a part of his self. His whole self is fully integrated spiritual substance, if you will. And when he's saying, how can I understand your form, as we make this point yesterday, also he's implying, how can I understand your bliss? No, I can understand your form, and much less I cannot understand what's going on inside that form. At the same time, Krishna's outside and inside are the same in one sense. No? There is not like external form and internal something. Everything about Krishna is internal, if you will. So in one way, Krishna's form is a reflection of Krishna's inner heart. Whatever, and on some level, it's happening to us, as we mentioned. No? Something is going on in my inner world that will reflect in my outer face. So Krishna has such a form that is that's speaking about what's the bliss he's experiencing in his inner self. Swarup Shaktinanda, we call that. The bliss that he experiences in connection to his devotees. And of course, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, at this point, Krishna is hearing all these prayers by Brahma, and Krishna starts to joke with Brahma and says, but you are praising me like that, but I am just a small, ignorant cowherd boy, and you are Brahma, the greatest personality in the universe. You deserve to be praised, and you are praising me. Why? So that's why Brahma is speaking all these verses, like trying to emphasize, no. You are the source of everything. You are the most worshipable person, and I'm an ignorant fool, although I thought I was very smart some minutes ago. No? But now I'm realizing that's not the case, basically. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, therefore, he mentions, in this verse, Brahma is expressing different levels of ignorance, different levels of vimohan, of bewilderment. No? I cannot understand your form, four-arm form. I cannot understand your two-arm form. I cannot understand the bliss you experience inside. I cannot understand the bliss your calves experience with you. I cannot understand the bliss your friends experience with you, the bliss you experience with your friend. I cannot understand anything. No? 5 minutes ago, I thought I understood everything. No, he's having an epiphany. No, imagine you think, I understand everything, and 5 minutes after you realize, I don't understand anything. So something happened in between, something interesting, basically. And the last and most important word we explained yesterday from the verse is Swechamaya. Krishna's form is appearing according to the will of his devotees. According to the affection of the devotees, Krishna manifests in a particular form. Similar to us on some level. No? If we are in front of a particular affection, we become something corresponding to that affection. If you have your child in front of you, you appear as a father, if you will. If you have your father in front of you, you transform into a friend. Still, you are the same person, but somehow something changes. So that happens with Krishna and the love of his devotees. As we say yesterday, if Hanuman is there, Krishna will become Ramachandra, because he has a form corresponding with the affection of the devotee. If Yashoda appears there, Krishna will appear as Bal Gopal, small baby. No? So his form, poetically speaking, is carved by the affection of his devotees, as I like to say. So again, basically Brahman, this verse is bewildered. How to understand? I cannot understand. I cannot understand. I cannot understand. So how to understand? So in today's verse, Brahma will share the key, if you will, of how to understand those things that otherwise are impossible to understand. And that's called, the concept is called Gyan Sunya Bhakti. although this term won't appear directly in the verses, we will see. But this verse, and I will share a brief context to the verse before we go to it, this concept of Gyan Sunya Bhakti, and this verse, which is very well known, one of the most, I would say, maybe the second most famous verse of the Brahma Stuti, after Tate Nukampam Shushamekshamano, probably. We have to see which is in the top five at this moment. But this verse also is quoted by Ramananda Roy when he's having a conversation with Mahaprabhu called Ramananda Sambhad. And Mahaprabhu is asking to Roy, Ramananda, speak to me about Sadhya Sadhana Tattva, the goal of life and the process to attain it, by quoting Shastra. Substantiate your points by referring to the revealed scriptures. So Ramananda Roy starts to speak, Varna Ashram is the goal of life. Like, he starts to give different proposals, starting from here to, we will see where it ends. So Varna Ashram, the goal of life, and he quotes Vishnu Purana. Mahaprabhu says, that's superficial, go deeper. Then he continues, like, offer the fruit of your karma to Krishna. That's superficial, go deeper. And many proposals, I won't enter into that detail, that's another series altogether. But Ramananda Roy proposes a good number of ideals, and Mahaprabhu is saying, superficial. Augment those truths. That's not enough, basically. Then he says, Gyan Mishra Bhakti, which is bhakti mixed with gyan, or gyan mixed with bhakti. You are practicing gyan and you use bhakti so you can be successful in your gyan, something like that. Mahaprabhu says, superficial, go deeper. And then Ramananda Roy says, Gyan Sunya Bhakti. And he will quote this verse. Gyan Sunya Bhakti means, bhakti means bhakti, and gyan means gyan. I hope you are already accustomed with our glossary on some level. No. Devotion and knowledge, no. Bhakti gyan. And sunya means devoid of, in this case. So bhakti devoid of knowledge. We will explain what's the meaning of this. Mm-hmm. Or bhakti, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say, unencumbered by knowledge. Mm-hmm. In other words, it refers to a bhakti, which I am practicing bhakti not in pursuit of the object of Brahm, of Gyan, which is Brahman realization, this type of oneness, not that type of bhakti. And bhakti without Gyan also means bhakti without Gyan. Gyan means knowledge. So bhakti without the knowledge that Krishna is God. Where do we find that type of bhakti?
Raj.
Okay, Vrindavan, no? Right. No? There nobody thinks or knows, quote-unquote, Krishna is God. So that's Gyan Sunya Bhakti also. Another way of understanding Gyan Sunya Bhakti. So to sustain his point, Gyan Sunya Bhakti is, if you will, the goal of life. And interestingly, we will see, when Ramananda quotes this idea and this verse, Mahaprabhu till now has been saying, superficial, say more. When he says this, Mahaprabhu will say, oh, this is nice. Say more. Say more, but on the basis of this is nice. Till before it's superficial. Keep expanding the idea. Gyan Sunya Bhakti. Oh, that's nice. Elaborate. No? So he will say that in response to this particular verse. So we will share this verse. You will have it today. Michael made a very interesting presentation here in the sign, so for all of you to see. I will share the verse here online. 1 second. Let's see if this works. Yeah. So this verse continues on the same chanda, on the same meter as the first two. Not the whole Brahma Stuti will be there, but till here we are on the same meter, which is Basanta Tilak. So you can follow the Sanskrit. It says like this. Jnane prayasamudapashyana mantaiva jivantistam mukaritam bhavadiya vartam sthanestitam shrutigatam tanumambano vir je prayaso jitajitopya sitraistrilokyam. Basically, that's the verse. I hope I recited properly, and I hope Michael wrote it properly. Yeah? Okay. So I will share with you now the translation. But I will share it also here with your permission. So it says like this. Oh Bhagavan. No, Brahma is speaking, remember. Oh Bhagavan. Although, as a general rule, you are invincible throughout the three worlds, even you become conquered by those who, having abandoned all striving for Gyan, live their lives solely for venerating through body, speech, and mind the sacred narrations of your lilas. Such narrations enter their ears of their own accord, flowing from the mouths of sages, while they remain situated in a fixed location. So this is today's verse. Very interesting verse, which again speaks about Gyan Sunya Bhakti. So let's go to the word by word, and then I didn't torture Michael to write word by word, that will be too much, so I will just share that, but you can follow the words that I'm mentioning there, and then we will share some explanation. So the first word is Gyane, which refers to Gyan, no? So in this case, it refers foreknowledge. No? Gyan is knowledge, Gyane is foreknowledge. Then Prayasam, which means the endeavor. And then comes an interesting word, which is Udapashya. Udapashya means having given up completely. So first part speaks about that, having given up completely the endeavor for knowledge. Of course, we will explain what's the meaning of this also now. Namanta eva. Instead, namanta eva. Simply by offering namanta, namaskar, namaste, offering obeisances, basically, offering pranam. That's first line, right? Then jivanti. Jivanti means they live. These people who have rejected the knowledge and so on, they live. How? Satmukaritam, chanted by sadhus. Mukaritam coming from their mouths, and sat refers to the sadhus. Bhavadiya bhartam, topics related to you. So they live by sustaining themselves by topics related to you, which are chanted by your sadhus. Stanesthita means while remaining in one place. Shrutigatam, received by hearing. So they are hearing, these persons are hearing all these topics. Tanubak manovir, this is a classical expression. Tanubak manovir, tanu means body, bak means words, and mana means mind. So with body, words, and mind, ye, who, means prayasa, in this case means generally, ajita, name for Krishna, which means the unconquerable. So ajita means, oh, unconquerable one, basically. But then comes another word, which says, jita, which means conquered. No? So, oh, unconquerable one, you are conquered. Api means although. So although you are unconquerable, actually you become conquered. Asi means become. You become. Te tahi, by them, by that people who chant your, by hear your kata, trilokyam, within the three worlds. So within those who are within the three worlds, you are you are known as unconquerable within the three worlds, but nonetheless you will become conquered by those who hear about your topics and dedicate their life to sustain their very existence by serving with mind, body, and words, those words, your words. So let's try to unpack a little bit the context of this verse, the content. So I'll begin as usual by reading Bhaktivedanta Bhavanubad, which is a brief explanation that my Guru Maharaj has made of this verse that will be published in his forthcoming book, Sakya Mandala, which kind of summarizes all the other commentators have said. So I will share this, and then we will go to some of the elder commentators, and let's see where we end. So it says like this. The notion that bhakti possesses greater salvific efficacy than jnana, is central to Brahma's eulogy. So bhakti has much more power than jnana to take one into penetration into transcendence. Jnanis and yogis often overtly appear more spiritual than devotees to the untrained eye. And this is particularly so when jnanis and yogis are compared to Krishna's cowherd friends, who in many respects appear just like ordinary, uneducated cowherds, as does Krishna himself. So this is an important point. Generally, to the untrained eye, if you see a jnani or a yogi, not someone just wearing, I don't know, loincloth with long dreadlocks and dressed in ashes, not living in a cave, you'll say, wow, super advanced. But if you see a devotee, you may not think, oh, that's such extraordinary. And what to speak if you see the cowherd boys playing and eating, having a picnic, say, I mean, that's, I can do that. Again, untrained eye. Why this is so? Because generally we tend to think, okay, on one side of the equation we have material life, materialistic life, and we know what that means. I mean, no need to enter into the details. We know the art of being materialistic. So we may think, okay, if this is to be materialistic, if sense enjoyment, let's say, for example, is materialistic life about, then the opposite of that should be spiritual. So sometimes we make this type of idea. So if material life is enjoyment, then renunciation has to be spiritual. So the more someone is overtly renounced, we will think, wow, super advanced spiritually. But bhakti, interestingly, is not that one extreme nor the other. Bhakti doesn't have to do with karma nor with jnana. It's not about enjoyment, selfish enjoyment, but it's not about detachment. It's about loving Krishna. And in that loving Krishna, there is a form of enjoyment and there is a type of detachment. But bhakti is a middle path. No? Karma and jnana are on the two sides of the pendulum. But bhakti is in the middle, and that's why it's so difficult to understand. The Bhagavatam says, Nanirbinonatishakto bhakti yogasya siddhidha. If you want to attain perfection in bhakti, you have to be not too much attached, but not too much detached. Because if you are too much attached to enjoy everything for you, you will forget that everything is for Krishna. But if you are too much detached from everything, you won't be able to engage anything in the service of Krishna. Because you are detached from everything. Even from Krishna, you may become detached. No. But Srila Prabhupada will say, Krishna consciousness is not the science of detachment, but it's the science of attachment to Krishna. So in that sense, bhakti is in the middle point. It's not the extreme of karma, the extreme of jnana. And again, overtly doesn't seem that extraordinary. The devotee seems to be doing what everyone else is doing, what to speak, the associates in the lila. But if you train your eyes, if you pay close attention, you will realize, wow, this is super extraordinary. This is above all other forms of spiritual discipline, basically. So it's difficult to understand. No? The scriptures say, Vaishnava kriya modra vigneya nabuyaha. It's not so easy to understand the movements of a devotee. Because that person seems to be part of the world, normal, ordinary, but his, her inner motivation when engaging with this world is worlds apart. Because he or she has a different conceptual orientation. The devotee is not seeing the world as, okay, this is ready for me to jump in and extract as much as I can. But he's saying, oh, this is one of Krishna's potencies. So I have to connect to that potency in the service of its energetic source. The world is an energy of Krishna. Krishna is the energetic. So we have to connect energy with energetic source. And we are one energy as well. So again, externally seems mundane. Internally supramundane, especially if we go to Vrindavan and watch what they are doing in Braj. Again, informality, picnic, eating with the left hand and taking something. Oh, Krishna, taste that. This is really good. And Krishna said, wow, this is, I'm taking from their mouth and putting it. I said, what? Those are the most advanced spiritualists. So you have to really pay close attention to follow that. No? But there's supreme detachment in that. For example, Uddhava, who is not a Brajavasi, he's bordering that because he went to Vrindavan and was really affected for that. He once said, Tvayu pabukta shaganda basa lankara charchita bhujino uchita dasas maya yatma jaye mahi. So he's saying, I will conquer the influence of the illusory energy, he says, by eating your remnants, he's speaking to Krishna, by eating what you have eaten, by wearing your clothes, by decorating myself with your ornaments. And at that time, Krishna was a prince in Dwarka. So he ate pretty fancily. He had very nice clothes. But Uddhava is saying, I will only accept those things which are your remnants. I will just survive on the strength of what comes from my master. although externally all that comes from Krishna seems pretty opulent, Uddhava is being extremely detached there in terms of ego. And his ego is saying, I'm your servant. I will only survive from whatever comes from you as a remnant. Externally, it happens to be super opulent, but he's not taking anything in that sense. He's taking, I'm surviving on your remnants, my master. So that's the highest level, higher level of renunciation than wearing a loincloth on the cave. Because you can have loincloth, cave, and ashes, but your ego may be still, I'm the center or something. But Uddhava is surrounded by this fancy stuff, but his inner world is, I'm your servant and I'm surviving for whatever you have used. So that's a higher level of yogic discipline. Although it doesn't seem so, that's why we have to train our eye to understand the devotees, bhakti, bhakta. So, returning to the commentary, remember. Thus, Brahma feels the need to make his case for bhakti unequivocally and for the extreme form of bhakti that he experienced in particular. After all, Svetashvatara Shruti 3.8 states, knowing Brahman, one can surpass death. Tarhitameva viditva atimrityumeti. If this is so, then how can an apparently ignorant person attain liberation? Now, because again, Krishna and his friends apparently are ordinary persons. But Brahma is praising them from tip to toe. So the scripture is speaking about only one who knows Brahman can surpass death. So they seem ordinary. So how to harmonize that? Thus, Brahma answers this question by making a clear case for the preeminent position of Gyan Sunya Bhakti, bhakti unencumbered by knowledge. That bhakti that he witnesses in Krishna's friends, and now he will quote his own version of the verse, but basically his an idea here in this moment with Gyan Sunya Bhakti will be, again, bhakti unencumbered by knowledge. Sometimes we call that divine ignorance. You have this saying in English, right? Ignorance is bliss. So that means Gyan Sunya Bhakti for us. Of course, the saying is applied in another context, but we will reapply in the proper context. Divine ignorance means, I'm so absorbed in Krishna in this particular direction that I do not know anything else. Because whenever you are focused in something, you are ignorant of something else. Always. You are not concentrated in everything at the same time. You are focusing something and giving your back to something else, basically. So this is the idea of Gyan Sunya Bhakti. So my Guru Maharaj renders this verse in the following way, and with this we'll finish his commentary. He says, rejecting any endeavor, so somehow we'll go into a re-rendering of this verse. Rejecting any endeavor for knowledge in an ascending, self-effort-based approach, aroha means this, like by my own effort I'm trying to know you, rejecting all those approaches to knowing you in terms of your indeterminate feature of Brahman and showing no interest in your majestic features. Remember, these two are Gyan Sunya Bhakti. I don't have interest for Brahman in personal realization. I don't even have interest in your reality as God. In Vrindavan, they are not interested in any of those things. They are interested in Krishna as he is. No? You have Bhagavad Gita as it is. In Vrindavan, we find Krishna as he is. The son of Yashoda, the friends of Sridham, and so on. So rejecting all this, my Guru Maharaj is applying this verse to Krishna's friends. Rejecting all this, these Vrajavasis, Sakis, Sakas, your friends feel at home here in your bucolic abode as cow herdsmen with no ambition to go elsewhere. No. They are fully satisfied in serving you as a friend, loving you as a friend. Here there's the word sthaneshtita in the Sanskrit, which means different things. Basically means remain fixed in one's position. So we will see some possibilities of this word. But one of them means remaining in one's position, like one can remain in any position you are in your society and you can serve Krishna from there. No need to make any extreme adjustment or anything. Or if it's applied to Krishna's friends in Vrindavan, they have no desire to go elsewhere. In other words, they are fully satisfied loving Krishna as a friend and they want to do that for eternity. And they do that for eternity. But again, a first consideration of sthanesthita means you can perform bhakti no matter what's your position of society, which is a very revolutionary statement, no? Because that means bhakti is basically transcending varna ashram, which in India for lots of time, even today in some places, so much intense, like if you are not born in such caste or in such family, you don't have right to do this or to do that, and if you are a Brahmin, you are high. And on some level, those considerations are there, but in connection to bhakti, thus it's not playing out. What's the conclusion of the Gita? You know, what Krishna says in the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita? Sarva dharmam parityaja. Reject, totally reject all these types of dharma. And Acharya said that refers to varnashram dharma in one level. So basically means whatever is your condition, even if you are born as an outcase with the worst possible birth, bhakti is so powerful that it can descend to that point and redeem you from that and take you to the highest, the highest of the highest. So no need to be a sannyasi, no need to be renunciant. No? Bhaktivinoda Thakur would say, grihe tako vane tako sadahari vale tako. Whether in the forest or at home, always glorify Hari. For example, renunciation is not a prerequisite for bhakti. But if you go to Gyan, the process of Sankaracharya, renunciation is required as a prerequisite. Sannyasi is required as a prerequisite to attain mukti. So try to imagine, not much hope for most. No? I want to attain this goal, okay, first become sannyasi. Okay. No? And if you go to the yoga system of Patanjali, right at the beginning, Yama Niyama. One of them, Brahmacharya. And don't try to translate Brahmacharya in a fancy way. So, no, Brahmacharya also means... No, Brahmacharya means celibacy. Of course we can give some etymological interpretation, threading the path of Brahma, but it means celibacy. So again, and that's Yama Niyama. I mean, what to speak of asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, samadhi. From day one, no? First, before you see it, for the asana, brahmacharya. Oh, I cannot be a celibate, so you cannot practice this, sorry. No. But bhakti is not asking for any of those things. Why? Because it's more powerful than jnana and bhakti. It's not because it's inferior. Because it's so much powerful that it can even reach a totally unqualified recipient and redeem that to the higher realm. So that's a very important point. No? In other words, we cannot attain, seen from the other side, realization of Krishna in Vrindavan through varna ashram, through jnana. We need bhakti. We need the grace of Bhagavan. So in this way, our practice of bhakti needs to be uncovered or unencumbered by jnana and by karma. Jnana, karma, adi, and abritam. That's when Rupa Goswami defines uttam bhakti. He says, jnana, karma, adi, and abritam. No need. It hasn't been to be. You don't have to think, I need to engage in karma, I need to engage in jnana so my bhakti is successful. No. As Brahma will show, bhakti is independent, and actually jnana and karma need to be mixed with bhakti for them to give their own respective fruits. So it's not that bhakti depends on other processes. Other processes depend on bhakti. Bhakti is supremely independent. And again, sthanesthita also means, you know, apart from being in one situation, in whatever social situation you are, sthanesthita also means without the desire to go elsewhere. So referring to Krishna's friends, and they are practicing bhakti, and their goal is practicing bhakti. That's another way of establishing the supremacy of bhakti. Bhakti is the means, and bhakti is the goal. We engage in bhakti, so we can engage in bhakti as a goal. We are not engaging in bhakti for mukti. We are not engaging in bhakti for heavenly delights. We are engaging in bhakti for further bhakti. Like when Srila Prabhupada was asked, what's the result of, what's the fruit of chanting Hare Krishna? And he just like, very like, normally say, well, to chant more Hare Krishna. Like, why will we want something else? Like common sense, right? And the other person was like, well... So they don't want to go anywhere else. That's a very beautiful idea of bhakti. It means basically, what you are doing now, you will be doing in eternity. So you already have the opportunity of being doing those things that you project to do forever. That's how user-friendly bhakti is. You will be chanting, serving, and so on. That's the idea you will be doing in eternity. Of course, with much deeper feeling, and that's why we are still here. But the practices are the same. So that's why the friends of Krishna are totally satisfied where they are. Now, it's the famous story when when Krishna is showing to the Brajavasis, at one point the Brajavasis think, oh, this our Krishna has so much special powers. He killed those demons and did that, did this. Let's ask him about our next life. Probably he knows and he can show us which will be our next lifetime. So all the Brajavasis in their transcendental naivete go, and Krishna says, okay, I will show you your next life. You close your eyes for a minute, he tells. Now he does a little bit of magic. No, close your eyes. So now open your eyes. No, so the Brajavasis open their eyes and they see like some form of portal. But in that portal, what they see is exactly the same situation in where they are on earth. So it's like if Krishna is putting a mirror in front of them. And all the Brajavasis look at what's going on in their next life and they realize, oh, the same thing that is going on now. And they are totally, oh, great. All of them are happy, like, wow, this is incredible. We will meet, we will continue going, meeting each other and loving. Nobody's thinking, oh, I wanted something else, because there is no something else, basically. So let's go to the last part of my Guru Maharaj's rendering of this verse. From here, they loudly sing about and listen to recitations of your glorious acts and qualities. Endeavor to understand your witticisms and intentions and touch you through service to you and through accepting service from you. Thus, they are preoccupied with you and those related to you through their words, thoughts, and deeds. And by this alone, they conquer you with such love, making you their equal. Despite the fact that you are otherwise unattainable by ordinary verbal, mental, and physical efforts. So, this is a little bit the rendering of my Guru Maharaj of this verse, mostly focusing Krishna's friends. So, let's go a little bit to the purpose of other acharyas and some ideas before we conclude today's meeting. So, as I mentioned, remember, Mahaprabhu, after hearing this, he was rejecting everything, superficial, go deeper. He hears this idea, oh, nice, go deeper. Now, like implying, this is the very foundation for the love we find in Vrindavan. And of course, Mahaprabhu wants to hear from Ramananda Roy, what's the highest reach of love, and that will be in connection to Vrindavan. But before we reach to the highest love of Braj, first you have to establish what's the very foundation of the love of Braj in general. And Gyan Sunya Bhakti is that. They are not aware that Krishna is God. They love him as their child, their friend, their beloved, and so on. So that's why Mahaprabhu accepted, okay, now we are on firm ground here. Let's try to construct, build upon this. That's a good foundation to build whatever we want to build. So Mahaprabhu was specially attracted to this. Because again, devotional practice is totally devoid of all type of separate desire, even the engagement for Gyan. So let's try to unfold a little bit this idea of Gyan Sunya Bhakti, which means bhakti unencumbered by Gyan. Srila Siddhar Maharaj, he once, in his words, as we spoke the other day, he will quote maybe Napoleon or give some other examples. So when he's speaking about Gyan Sunya Bhakti, he calls this brain dead bhakti. Brain dead bhakti. Now, when brain is not operative, of course, we will explain what do we mean by this. Doesn't mean to be lazy intellectually or something like that. No? But the point is, the heart is so much awoken, to say, that I mean, it just follows. I mean, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say, we have to use our head to soften our heart. We have to use our head. For some reason, we have a head. No? And those are the two most important parts in our body, the head and the heart. You can live without arms, without legs, without many things, but without head and heart, no way. So we have to know what to do with these two, how the two can relate to each other. So we have to use our head to soften our heart. But do not try to soften your heart without using your head, because that may end up in emotionalism and sentimentalism, and that may not be very, very heart-like, actually. So the head is there to filter our heart. But again, the head is in the service of the heart. Use your head to soften your... But when your heart is softened and it's melted like butter, brain dead, bhakti, basically. No? In other words, at that point, like the devotees of Vrindavan, they are not concerned with knowledge. It's not that they don't have knowledge. They don't care for that. They have used... I mean, and that, how do you see that? As my Guru Maharaj said, when... I don't know, when a little cowherd girl from Vrindavan village come to this world as Rupa Goswami, how much knowledge that cowherd girl has. But in Vrindavan, they seem they cannot quote one single verse from scripture. They do not know Shastra. They are not like reciting verses. Like, but when they come in the Gaur Lila, so much knowledge they have. So all that knowledge is there, but there's no need for that in the dynamics of Braja Lila. So it's there. Knowledge is there. Aishwarya is there. What is in the background? As we can see, Aishwarya is there in Vrindavan. Brahma just saw the greatest display of Aishwarya that we will find in the whole Bhagavatam. All these expansions and Vishnus, that's in Vrindavan. But that's again in the background. Krishna showed that to Brahma. His friends were not there. That would be disturbing for his friends. What's going on, Krishna? This is too much. And knowledge is there in Vrindavan in another way. If you take knowledge, if you take love at the highest knowledge, and it is, Krishna says in the Gita, what Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam, Pavitram Ida Mohutamam. So Raja Vidya, he's speaking about Bhakti there. He said, Bhakti is the king of knowledge. Love is the king of knowledge. So wherever there's the most love, there's the highest knowledge. So you have highest knowledge and highest Aishwarya in Vrindavan. But again, interestingly, that's not playing out overtly in a way that is interrupting the flow of the Leela. Do you follow my point? Srila Siddharmas also used to give this example. He gave the example, of course, this example was given by him by like 30 years ago, maybe 40 years ago. He will give the example of United States, as I don't know if it's still true, but at that time it seemed it was. He says, United States is the most powerful military country in the world. So, but, he says, you are not walking in the streets and you are seeing all these tanks parading and walking in front of you and missiles and so on. Like, it will disturb the natural flow of daily life. But those things are there somewhere. And if some country attacks the country, the U.S., all those things will appear in the front. You follow? But there's no need for those in the daily normal life. That will be disturbing. So similarly, he's saying in Vrindavan, all this Aishwarya and Gyan knowledge and majesty, all these missiles and tanks are there in the background. But they are not appearing in the front because that will be too disturbing. So that's how this type of ideas play themselves out. Remember when Uddhava went to Vrindavan, we refer to him quite often because it's a similar case with this that of Brahma. Uddhava is a friend of Krishna, servant of Krishna, but he's a Jnani Bhakta. He has knowledge Krishna is God. He loves Krishna, he has friendship with Krishna, but his friendship is mixed with his God. So it's a particular friendship, because imagine how do you relate with your friends, your friend knowing he's God. I mean, Uddhava does somehow. But he goes to Vrindavan, as we know Krishna sent him as a messenger, please pacify the Brajavasis in separation from me. We studied that recently in the Brahma Gita. And he tries to pacify the telling, oh Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda, do not suffer. Your son is God. So he's everywhere. So no need to suffer in separation. He's in every place. And Nanda Maharaj looks at him like, Uddhava, no? I heard that you were a smart person for many people. Wise, like Krishna's minister in Dwarka, but now that I hear you speaking, I realize you are a fool. Krishna is God. Huh? How can you say that? He say, I know God. Nanda Maharaj say, I worship God every day on my altar. Narayan is God, and I worship God, and I know how God is. God is self-satisfied. He's peaceful. He has all his desires in place. Krishna is the opposite of that. I know him. He's all day asking me things. If I do not give to him what he wants, he starts crying. He lies. He steals. Ananda Maharaj is not aware of his rendezvous with the gopis. So he's not peaceful at all, Ananda Maharaj is saying, no, to Uddhava. So how can you say that Krishna is God? Uddhava is like, what am I supposed to say here? Oh my gosh. And then again, he goes to the gopis and tries to convince them, and the gopis, Radharani starts to speak with the bumblebee, and they start to show a display of Mahabhava and the highest love that Uddhava is just like, where I am? What's going on here? And he starts to realize, actually, I thought I came to give a message, but Krishna sent me here for me to receive a message from them. I thought I came to school them, but they are schooling me, actually. Now I understand which was the mercy of Krishna by sending me here. He wanted to give me a gift, basically. So that my point is, Uddhava went with this knowledge to Vrindavan. Krishna is God, Krishna is God. He entered Vrindavan, that knowledge was destroyed, basically, by the heart of the Vrajavasis. And with that they show, there's no place for this idea in Vrindavan, Krishna is God. What to speak of Nirvishesh Gyan, this impersonal knowledge that points to Brahman and so on. So again, the only place that you will find this absence of knowledge is Vrindavan. Vrindavan. So it's important to understand, because again, Brahma is pointing to Vrindavan. Rama wants to become a friend of Krishna in Vrindavan. So he's establishing the philosophical foundation for his own desire and longing. Let's go to some of the purpose of our ancient acharyas. You have some minutes? Okay. We have eternity. Thank you so much. I was testing if you gave the correct answer. Okay. Nira passed the test. Okay, very good. So the class is too long. You have to speak with Nira. So let's go with Sridhar Swami. Sridhar Swami is one of the most ancient Bhagavad commentators. So he basically, in his commentary, he starts emphasizing how user-friendly bhakti is. No? A point that we already make. And Krishna says in the Gita, Sushrukam Kartum Abhyayam. No? This practice is easy to perform. Of course, some of you may say, Maharaj, it's not that easy. No, not that easy. Okay, I accept. But it's comparatively easy or easier if you compare Gyan, Yoga, again, Sannyas, Brahmacharya, go to the cave. That's not so easy. No? Bhakti saying, Stanesthita, from wherever you are, you can start bhakti. Oh, user-friendly. Of course, there will be some difficulties. Not because bhakti is difficult, but because we are difficult. Bhakti is very simple. But to be simple is very difficult. You follow? Love is simple. Reality is very simple. But to be simple, that's not so easy. And we are in the midst of that. We are very unnecessarily complicated. So we are trying to simplify our lives. But bhakti is very simple. If we are simple, bhakti is simple. Sometimes the devotee is called Saralata, which means simple person. So, again, bhakti is simple. There is no need of prayasa, one of the words in the verb. Prayasa means unnecessary effort. We have a certain amount of energy. We have to know what to do with that and how to use properly. So in bhakti, there's no need for excessive effort. But just, what was this verse saying? Just listen Harikatha and you can attain the goal. Just listen to the narrations of Krishna and you can attain perfection by listening. I said, just listening? And the point is, it's so easy that it may be difficult for us to believe that it's possible. That's the interesting thing about bhakti. It's so simple and so easy that we say, no, it cannot be like that. So we don't have the faith that actually it's that powerful just by, I don't know, the scripture sometimes says, if you chant, I don't know, half a syllable of the Maha Mantra, you attain the highest goal. No, that's too much. No? Artavad, no? Artavad means exaggeration. And by us thinking like that, we commit offense and we cannot experience that unique thing that just say, ha, not hare, ha, done. No. It's just hearing. I mean, Pariksit Maharaj is an example of that. Pariksit Maharaj is our Shravanakya Guru. Just by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, he attained perfection. Of course, he only heard. He was not in need. Oh, I need to check Instagram, and I need to do this, and I need. He was just hearing, and he was capable of just hearing. He didn't eat nor sleep. Didn't eat nor sleep. That was high standard. Just hearing. That means just hearing. Srila Prabhupada said, "Just chant Hare Krishna and be happy." Sounds easy, right? Like once when the Buddha told Prabhupada, I think it was Jamuna Devi, he said, "Prabhupada, you cheated us." He said, "Chant Hare Krishna and be happy, but it's not happening. It's not so easy." No. And Prabhupada's like, smile, like, chuckle, like, "You caught me." Again, the potential is there. Just chant and be happy. But are we capable of just chanting and be happy? Still, no. Once my Guru Maharaj was giving a lecture about all these different topics of the philosophy, and someone at the end asked, "But Swamiji, why just chant Hare Krishna and be happy? Why all this need of this philosophy and all this concept? Why all this stuff? Just Hare Krishna, chant and be happy." So my Guru Maharaj replied, "And you are doing that? You are only chanting and you are happy? Or you need to do so many other things yet?" And he like, "Okay, next question." No? So yeah, just by chanting, just by hearing, everything can be attained. But the point is, still we need feel the need of so many other things to do, to have, to experience. So gradually we are trying to make Krishna part of that agenda. And gradually we will be more and more attentive to his agenda. How can I be part of his agenda? But this verse is making the point, at least. The Bhagavatam starts with this, second verse. Just by hearing Bhagavat, Krishna immediately becomes situated in the heart of the devotee. Just by hearing Bhagavatam. The point is, these lines I'm sure we have heard many times, but somehow enters here, but it doesn't go here sometimes. No? It's like enters here and and continues flying here and there. No? So, Gyan Prajasa Udapasya. No? So, this verse speaks about Udapasya means rejecting totally, and Gyan Prajasa means the effort to know. So, again, we are not promoting here do not think, be stupid, or be lazy intellectually. But we are mentioning to try to think too much, that's complicated. That's a big baggage you have to carry. But we need to use our head so nicely that we reach the point that we realize this has its limits. Only those who are really using their intellectual capacity as much as they can will reach this point that their own intellect will say, "I can carry you till this point. From that upwards, you need another method. It has been nice to travel with you till here, but now you have to go to another vehicle." Limits, intellect has its limits. If you only depend on your head, you will end up in a sort of limbo. That's what the Shastra say. Tarka pratishtana. Tarka pratishtana. Only through tarka. Tarka means like logic and head. Apratishtana. Pratishtana means position. Apratishtana means no position. You will end nowhere. Limbo. Guaranteed. If you want if you want to approach Krishna with your head, be ready for the result of that. I mean, again, we can use the head, but understanding its limits. And in such a way that it's softening our heart, not that it's hardening our heart. Because if you use your head wrongly, your heart becomes a rock, basically. No more heart, if you will. And everything becomes calculation and control. That's Maya. Maya means to control. And the head is a lot about that. Knowing, possessing, controlling, calculating. And that has nothing to do with love. So we have to be very careful. And thoughts are subtle forms of things. So you can be attached to things or you can be attached to thoughts, which are not very healthy, very becoming also. So how this verse is saying, obtain relief from your head, Gyan Prayasa Udapasya, Namanta Eva. Namanta Eva means put your head on the ground. Namaste, namaskar. No? What to do with my head? Put it on the ground, basically. That's what Rama is doing here. No? As we say, he's taking turns with his four heads. One, two, three, four. No? He's giving the example. He's walking the talk. So, and how to put our head in the ground? Because, of course, it's not just a physical thing, put your head in the ground. Although, just doing that already creates some interesting inner situation. Just by physically, no? Like my Guru Maharaj likes to say, no, you will like to have tears of ecstatic love flowing from your eyes. First, you must expect another form of water expanding from your body in the form of sweating in the service of your Guru. Then the other type of water will come. But first you have to be committed to render service to your well-wishers, your guardians. So similarly, now you want to have some internal movements of ecstasy. First, start with some external movement and put your head on the ground. That will create some internal movement. Again, not as a forced thing, but understanding this is important. I mean, again, the most wise person, intelligent person on the planet and more is doing that here, is saying that here. No? Stop thinking too much and just put your head on the ground. And by putting your head on the ground, you will get to know much more than by trying to know everything through your intellect. In other words, by doing this mudra, if you will, namaskar, presenting yourself in this way, you will, or if you are doing sincerely, of course, it's not just some choreography, you will be disposing yourself, opening yourself to receive some things that are not attainable just by mere calculation, not possible. Mm-hmm. And how to do that? This verse is elaborating. How do I incline my head? Also by hearing these narrations about Krishna. That naturally predisposes us to venerate, to worship, to appreciate. And again, just hearing. You are hearing now, hopefully. I'm looking at your face. You seem to be hearing. So in one sense, to hear, you don't have to do that much effort. I mean, you have to, of course, drive till here, have nice prasad, maybe make an effort not to fall asleep now after prasad, after the feast. But you are just sitting there and everything rest is just coming. It's not that you, with the other senses, sometimes need to do more effort to do one thing or the other. To touch, to hear, to whatever, to smell or to watch. But hearing is just like receiving what's coming. Of course, it's simple, but not that simple. Something has to be done. We have to hear from proper person and we have to hear with proper attitude, basically. You have to hear correctly. It's not just being there physically, but how internal disposition. And Srila Siyamaraj once, he used these five terms: Shravana, Varana, Sadhana, Apana, Prapana. Like a pun, no? Like a play of words. Shravana means to hear. Varana means to accept what I'm hearing. Again, this is not an imposition, but if you are hearing from someone you trust, ideally you will accept what's coming from there. So you hear, you trust, then sadhana. You practice what you have heard and what you have accepted. Because if you hear and accept something, but then you are not walking the talk, it's like, how much you accepted that? So shravan, hear. Varan, accept. Sadhana, practice. Apana, some insights will come from that practice, some realization. And prapana, he says, you will be able to share those realizations with others. That's the only thing you can share with others. If you don't have an insight of that, you are not sharing that thing actually. But it all begins with hearing, then accepting, practicing, realizing, sharing. So, but the important thing, and over again, is Shastri is saying, try to hear from the Guru, for example. No? You hear from Guru, and Guru, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say, he says always, okay, my role as a Guru is to make you uncomfortable. He says, no, welcome to all, sorry for this, but I'm here to take you out of your comfort zone. Basically, that's like the commitment of the guru with the disciple, of course, with someone who also has accepted that person. I cannot just like put honey in your ears, if you will, like, oh, you're so nice, so incredible, you remain just like you are there. I mean, you as a disciple will be frustrated. I say, no, Guru, Dev, please pinch me a little bit. Not that much either, but a little bit. So the idea is, My Guru Maharaj would like to say, the role of the Guru is to make the disciples doubt. But not doubt, I'm in the right place, doing the right thing, but just doubt, I thought I understood this in this way, and now I'm here in this other way, and I realize, oh, I didn't understand anything. Mm-hmm. Like Brahma here. Brahma is having a lot of doubts, but for good. No, I mean, he's having a transformation. So the Guru is creating this doubt that will nourish our faith. No? There is a way that faith will be nourished by doubt. No doubt about that. But not the doubt that Krishna says in the Gita, those who doubt always about everything, they end up nowhere. We are not speaking about that type of cynicism, you say? Cynicism. Where you are like not trusting anything. No. No, the type of healthy doubt that takes you out of the comfort zone and makes you think from another perspective. And, oh, this I used to see in this way, and now I realize there's a bigger picture. So a doubt comes regarding my own previous understanding, but faith is nourished with that. So the point is, by hearing in that way from proper source with proper attitude, what happens, what the fruit of such hearing, last line of this verse, ye prayaso jita jitopya sitra istilokyam. Basically, he who is ajita, he who is unconquerable, becomes conquered. You can conquer the unconquerable by hearing with the proper attitude from the proper source. The supreme invincible, you say? In English, invincible becomes defeated by love, basically. Tanu ban manor bir, he says, body, mind, and words, and this can be applied to the devotees engaged those in the service of Krishna, or Krishna's body, mind, and words becomes conquered by his devotees, by those who hear without attention. And Krishna will use his own sensory faculties, body, mind, words, to serve that person who is hearing about him sincerely. That's the idea, basically. For those who hear about him from the dear devotees, San Mukaritam, Krishna becomes conquered, basically, by bhakti. I mean, that's the teaching of the Bhagavatam. God is conquered by bhakti. That's Krishna in Vrindavan, especially. He's so conquered that he's no longer God, in one sense. God remains there somewhere in Vaikuntha. But in Vrindavan, Krishna is something else. Krishna is conquered by bhakti. And he himself, I mean, Bhagavatam famous verse saying, Aham bhakta paradino yashratan trivadya sadvigrastaritayo bhaktir bhakta jana priya. This is spoken by Narayan in Vaikuntha. He's saying, Aham bhakta paradino, I'm under the control of my devotees. Aham bhakta paradino yashratan trivadya. I'm known as Swatantra generally, independent, but to be honest, I'm totally dependent on them, on my devotees. This is who I am, actually. And this is Narayan in Vaikuntha speaking. So if this is said by Narayan in Vaikuntha, what must Krishna in Vrindavan be saying? You follow? Bhakti has that effect in the absolute, even in Narayan in Vaikuntha, to some degree. How much that same verse applies to Krishna Vrindavan, how much he's not independent, he's totally controlled by their love. So this is a very nice verse. There are 6 verses in this section. These are verses spoken by Narayan to Durvasa Muni. Remember when he wanted to kill Ambarish Maharaj, and he was chasing and took shelter in Vaikuntha, and Vishnu told him, you are asking forgiveness to me by the offense you committed to Ambarish, and he starts to speak, but I'm totally controlled by my devotees. So he starts to indirectly say to Durvasa Muni, you did a very wrong thing. You see how much I love them. There are 6 verses in that section, very famous, very nice. We did some study of that in, I don't remember where, maybe North Carolina last year. I'm tempted to go to each one of the 6 verses, but you have to cancel all your commitment for eternity. Yeah. Or another option, the series is there on YouTube, you can watch that. That's easier, maybe. So again, Gyan Sunya Bhakti means, and this idea that the unconquerable becomes conquered, Gyan Sunya Bhakti is not so much what you know, but as the popular saying says, who you know. It's all about contacts. No? Like, you can be a very nice musician, but if you don't have the proper context, nobody may know about how nice you are as a musician, basically. So the karmis are interested in enjoyment. The gyanis are interested in knowing. No? So enjoying, knowing, and the bhaktas are interested in serving he who enjoys and knows everything, Krishna. That's bhakti, basically. To know the proper person. To know Krishna, he's the enjoyer. I'm not the enjoyer. He's the knower. I'm not the knower. So I will serve him, basically. That's the idea. So this verse presents this idea of serving Krishna through hearing. That's a very nice idea. Because sometimes we have this idea of serving is just doing physical stuff. Do service, which means very basically carry a very heavy burden that nobody wants to do, or go and clean a Govardhan pile of pots or something. But sometimes we don't think, I don't know, chanting japa is service. Srila Prabhupada said that's the most important service, for example. Confirmed by Indranath Chakravarti. Thank you.
Sorry.
No, part of the soundtrack. So, hearing also is seva. Hearing is seva. Although you are just sitting there comfortably, we smile nicely, but that's seva. You are offering your valuable time and energy and trying to dispose yourself. So that's, I mean, Krishna is taking that very seriously, just for you to know. He's saying, oh, there's Nila very nicely seated in the class here and trying to be open. Oh, look. Imai came also. He's hiding now, but he's there in the class. Okay. Not in that. We may forget that, but that's going on the other side. Remember, it's not only about us. There is someone else on the other side, and everything is reciprocal, and it's personal. And Krishna is a person. Krishna is not just a theological concept. He's the most real person we can imagine. Let's go to a few more words before we conclude with your generous time and disposition. So Sanatana Goswami in this connection says that Brahma here is referring to Krishna as you who are unattainable by means of the motions of the body, mind, body, voice and mind. So this is another idea. You are not attainable but Tanu Bhatmanovir, but body, mind and words. No? This is saying very famous verse, Atasri Krishna Nama Adinava Bredna Hyanindriya. The holy name of Krishna is not attainable by any of our senses. But but those who use their tongue with an attitude of service, they can understand those things. So it's interesting. The verse says, through your senses you cannot understand Krishna. But if you use your senses in bhakti, through those senses you can understand Krishna. So when it is said with your senses you cannot, means with your senses used in a certain way. But if your senses are used in the context of bhakti, those senses are facilitating your understanding of Krishna. Krishna will reveal himself to you through your tongue, through your ears, and so on. Jiva Goswami mentions regarding the sthanesthita, remain in one single place. Say, these devotees give up consideration of the powerful aspects of your form and out of longing remain in places where they are devotees rather than wandering about on pilgrimage with great suffering to the body. So here they are even discarding going on parikram, interestingly. Baladevi Devushan says a similar thing. He says, staying only in their own place, wherever you may be, but not traveling to a place of pilgrimage, they hear about your topics and attain you. I mean, we are not against going on parikram, but the point of parikram is to meet saintly people and hear from Krishna from them. So if you can do that in Kansas or in whatever, that's your pilgrimage, technically speaking. You can go to Vrindavan, you can go everywhere, but the essence of the pilgrimage is to hear about Krishna from saintly people. So if you have this chance anywhere, that's your saintly place, that's your parikram. Because the saintly person is personified pilgrimage site. Tirtha Kurbanti Tirthani Swantastina Gadavrita. Tirtha Bhuta Swayam Vibhu, famous verse in the Bhagavatam. Where, what's the name? He's telling to Vidura, Maitreya Rishi, and saying, I'm going on parikram. on pilgrimage. And Vidura kind of laughs, chuckles, like, you must be joking, say, because you yourself are personified place of pilgrimage. So whenever you go, that's a pilgrimage site. So you are saying that you are going on pilgrimage. That's like funny. So that's the idea. No? Whatever sadhu is, that's a pilgrimage place. Because you can hear from their mouth the topics of Krishna. And you don't need to be anywhere else, to go anywhere else. That's very clearly mentioned in this verse. Staneshtita, commented by our acharyas. So for those who for some reason do not have the chance of going to Vrindavan or Navadvip, do not be afflicted. Of course, if you can go, that's beautiful. But if you go, understand what's the purpose of going there also. Because you can go to the dham in the spirit of tourism also. And you can be in Kansas in the spirit of pilgrimage. So at the end of the day, Vrindavan is a state of consciousness. Mahaprabhu said that more mana Vrindavan. My mind is Vrindavan. So he can be anywhere. He remains in Vrindavan. So these sadhus are also Baladev Vidyabhushan say, generally the sadhus are known as munis. That's a Sanskrit word for a sage. And muni is connected to the word mona. Mona means silence. So generally the sadhus are known for being silent. No? Like they are not speaking too much and engaging in, how do you say, idle talk? Idle talk. Idle talk. Mm-hmm. No, they are quiet. No? But because of the nature of your topics, they become very talkative. No? They speak a lot. No? That's what the Vedanta Sutra say, Ikshate na shabda, which means we can never say enough about the Absolute. But nonetheless, we will try our best. Harikata kijai. So Jiva Goswami now makes another very nice thing. He connects these words of Tanu Bak Manobir, body, words, and mind, in connection to the topics about Krishna. How do they respect the topics about Krishna with their mind, body, and words? He's saying, at the time of hearing, they respect you with the body by folding their hands. No? Again, it's not just, okay, I'm doing it right now. No? It's a way of explaining how your body can be engaged in offering namantaiva to Harikata with the body. With words, the people will speak in agreement to Harikata. And they respect the topics by the mind by maintaining faith in your existence. In this way, jivanti. The word jivanti also can mean they pass their lives in this way. Engaged in this type of respect. Or, hearing these topics, jivanti. They receive life. These topics are their very life. Like the gopis once sang in the famous Gopi Gita. You know the song? Yeah. Tavakatamritam tapta jivanam kaviviriditam kalmasapaham shravanamangalam srimadatatam bhuvigrinantiye bhuridajana. That's ninth verse of the Gopi Gita. So basically gopis are saying tavakatamritam tapta jivanam. Jivanti, jivan. So, tavakatamritam, the katha about you, your harikatha is amritam, gives new life to those people who are dying in this world. Tapta jivana, who are being burned in this world. They are new life, giver of life. Or, Jiva Goswami also says, in connection to Tanu Bam Manovir, body, mind, and words, he says, you are attained by their bodies, mind, and words. You, Krishna, are attained by how your devotees use their body, mind, and words. Their hands touch your lotus feet, they call you by their words, and they decide to see you by their mind. That's sometimes how devotees can use body, mind, and words in connection to Krishna. Or, as we know, the commentators always make this, or your body is brought under control since you stay near the devotees. Your words are under control since you glorify your devotees, and your mind is controlled since you always think of your devotees. So all the things that are applicable to the devotees are applicable to Krishna in connection to his devotees. Because Krishna is the devotee of his devotee, as we say today. Bhagavan Bhakta Bhaktimam. A few minutes more, please. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is missing yet, so please we have to go to his counter. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gives a very another nuanced version of this. He says, without doing anything else, devotees pass their lives hearing topics about your name, qualities, and pastimes, and they show respect to the discourse with the body, the voice, and the mind, both at the beginning and at the end. This means they offer obeisances at that time with the body, not with the hands and the head by touching the ground. They offer pranam with the voice, with words such as obeisances to Krishna Katha and to the Vaishnavas who relish it. And they offer pranam with the mind and the intellect by grasping the meanings of the discourse. So here we see, we're not promoting do not think about anything. That's Gyan Sunya Bhakti. No, use your intelligence as much as you can, knowing its limits. So Gyan Sunya Bhakti doesn't mean be lazy regarding understanding scripture. That's forbidden. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says, Siddhanta Valiya Chitana Kara Alas. Krishna Haite Krishna Lage Sudrida Manash. Iha Haite Krishna Lage Sudrida Manash. He said, try to contemplate the Siddhanta, the conclusions of the scriptures, very thoroughly. And then he said, Nakara Alas, means don't be lazy. Because he knows we are lazy, so he has to tell him. Not like, like when Krishna says in the Gita, Sarva Dharma Paritya Mamekam Sharanam Braja Hamtam Sarva Papi Moksha Isi Chami. Of course, what does it mean, Masucha? Don't fear. Why he's saying don't fear? Because he sees we are like this, trembling, basically. So don't fear, don't fear, don't fear. If we are not fearful, he doesn't need to say don't fear. But he's saying, abandon everything and just surrender to me. And we are like, oh my gosh. No, it's like I have to jump from off the cliff. Don't fear, don't fear. So here, Krishna Dasgupta is saying, don't be lazy. Because he knows. You are lazy. Don't be lazy. Try to understand the Siddhanta. And he said, by doing that, he had Haiti Krishna Lagas Sudridamana. Krishna will become more firmly established in your mind. By working with your head, Krishna will take a more firm seat there. So again, Gyan Sonya Bhakti is not an excuse not to think. No? And to be stupid in the name of, oh, I'm giving my heart to Krishna or something. No? Shastriya Shraddha, the faith we have needs to be nourished by proper understanding of scripture. Shastriya Yukti, we have to use our logic according to what revelation. What is condemned here is just trying to think independently of revelation, independently of Harikatha, independently of what the sadhus are given. If you are just trying to, with your own head to reach Krishna, you end up nowhere. That's condemned. But when revelation comes to you, Shastra, Harikatha, do something with your head about that. That's the best opportunity you have to use your head. I mean, if you really enter into this philosophy, my God, I mean, your head will be in ecstasy. In ecstasy and also saying, I am starting to realize my limits. No? This is going off top of my head. But you can engage. You have to offer your intellect to Krishna. You have to offer your physical body to Krishna in service. You have to offer your subtle body to Krishna in service. Everything. Not only physical actions, but thoughts, intellectual processes. All that is to be made an offering. Of course, the more subtle, the more difficult to be the offering. It's easier, let me wash the pots. And okay, we have to begin somewhere. And we can wash the pots forever, no problem. But but not as an excuse not to offer the other sections of our inner self. So let me conclude this meeting by referring back for a minute to, remember we started with this Ramananda Sambhad, this conversation between Mahaprabhu and Roy Ramananda. So this is where we find this term Gyan Sunya Bhakti that is so central to today, no? Brain dead bhakti, which is implicit in this verse with the idea of Gyan Prayasa Udapasya. So again, this Gyan Sunya Bhakti is, of course, rejecting Gyan Mishra Bhakti, which was the previous proposal by Ramananda Roy, Bhakti mixed with Gyan, thus rejected by invoking Gyan Sunya Bhakti. But also again, Gyan Sunya Bhakti rejects the idea of not of using bhakti for the sake of mukti. Not interested in that. And Gyan Sunya Bhakti is rejecting the idea of bhakti with knowledge of Krishna's divinity. No? As a goal. No? In our practice, we need to be aware Krishna is God. But the more you get closer to Vrindavan, the more that idea needs to recede to the background. So you can relate with Krishna accordingly in Vrindavan. So in its ultimate application, this verse and the idea of Gyanasunya Bhakti is transporting us all the way to Vrindavan. Because that's the only place where you will find this divine ignorance, as we mentioned. In that place where Krishna is loved as a child, as a friend, as a lover. Not because he's God. That's a very important thought. Sorry if I'm repeating that too much. But generally we'll think, okay, God is to be served and loved because he's God. I mean, many people approach God with different reasons. Of course, Krishna says in the Gita, Artha Jignyasura Artha Tigyani Chavaratarshava. Some approach me because they want money. They want material prosperity. They are suffering. That's mostly the main club, no? The afflicted club. No? God, help me, I'm suffering. Okay, Krishna says, we have to begin somewhere. Some people want wealth, knowledge. Some people want money. Or some people is worshipping me because I'm God. But in Vrindavan, we don't find any of those approaches. Vrajabhadis are not approaching Krishna for knowledge. They are Gyan Sunya Bhaktas. They are not approaching for material welfare. They do not care for that. They are not approaching Krishna out of fear or suffering. They are not approaching Krishna because he's God. So again, that's a very extraordinary idea. Why do they approach Krishna? Because of something beyond the fact that he's God. Now, generally, one serves God because he's God. He deserves to be God, to be served. But Vrajavasis do not think like that. They're just spontaneously attracted to Krishna and to love him because he's so charming and beautiful, basically. So again, this verse is establishing this foundation of that type of bhakti that is found in Vrindavan, and which is, of course, the focus of Brahma. He wants to enter that as a friend of Krishna. And that's the focus of his longing, Braja Bhakti, Sakya Prema more specifically. So today I will finish here my explanation of this verse. Next verse will be tomorrow. Of course, if you have time, tomorrow Sunday, we will be also discussing the next verse, which will be a continuation, if you will, with this one. There's always some connection between verses. So in the next verse, we will further unpack the implications of this verse. And Brahma will be focusing on the futility of Gyan, devoid of bhakti. So it's kind of connected to the topic. But today we will put our Bhagavad Katha to rest here, and tomorrow we will continue. And if there are any questions, I don't want to overextend. We have Kirtan now, Arti. So we will share there and continue sharing a little bit more. And if there are questions, we can continue speaking this day. Srila Gurudev ki jai. Shriman Mahaprabhu ki jai. Shri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai. Shri Shri Gaur Nityananda ki jai. Vrajanath Haladari ki jai. Narasimha Bhagavan ki jai. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Brahma Stuti ki jai. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Gaur Premananda Hari Gaur.